slides. Every bit helps. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This morning we're reading the first canto, first chapter, third verse, Srimad Bhagavatam. Kindly turn to page 56. This will be our second of two really introductory classes for the text. Let's do the synonyms in unison, please. Nigama, the Vedic literatures. Kalpa taro, the desire tree. Galitam, fully matured. Palam, fruit. Shuka, Srila Shukadev Goswami, the original speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Mukat, from the lips of. Amrita, nectar. Drava, semi-solid and soft, and therefore easily swallowable. Samyutam, perfect in all respects. Pibata, do relish it. Bhagavatam, the book dealing in the science of the eternal relations with the Lord. Rasam, juice, that which is relishable. Alayam, until liberation, or even in a liberated condition. Muhu, always. Aha, oh. Rasikaha, those who are in full in the knowledge of mellows. Bhuvi, on the earth. Bhavukaha, expert and thoughtful. Nigama kalpataro galitam palam. Nigama kalpataro galitam palam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam. Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavuka. Nigama kapotoro galitam palam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Pibata bhagavatam rasam alayam. Muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuka. Please chant. Nigama kapataro galitam palam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Pibata bhagavatam rasamalayam. Muhuraho rasika bhuvi bhavuka. Nigama kapataro galitam palam. Shuka mukad amrita drava samyutam. Vibhata Bhagavatam Sambhavayam Nabhoraho Rasika Bhuri Bhavakaha. Anyone else? Nigamakalpataro Galitam Phalam Shuka Mukhadamrita Drava Samyutam Pibata Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam Muhura Hora Sika Bhuvi Bhavaka. Anyone? Shuka Mukhadamrita Drava Samyutam Translation, please read together. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its sectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. Can we take the mic and start with a purport, please? One of the microphones. Just read the first paragraph and pass it on, please.
In the two previous shlokas, it has been definitely proved that Srimad Bhagavatam is the sublime literature which surpasses all Vedic scriptures due to its transcendental qualities. It is transcendental to all mundane activities and mundane knowledge. In this shloka, it is stated that Srimad Bhagavatam is not only a superior literature, but it is the ripened fruit of all Vedic literatures. In other words, it is the cream of the Vedic knowledge. Considering all this, patient and submissive hearing is definitely essential. With great respect and attention, one should receive the message and lessons imparted by the Srimad Bhagavatam.
The Vedas are compared to the desert tree because they contain all things knowable by man. They deal with mundane necessities as well as spiritual realization. The Vedas contain regulated principles of knowledge covering social, political, religious, economic, military, medicinal, chemical, physical, and metaphysical subject matter, and all that may be necessary to keep the body and soul together. Above and beyond, all these are specific directions for spiritual realization. Regulated knowledge involves a gradual raising of the living entity to the spiritual platform. And the highest spiritual realization is knowledge that the personality of Godhead is the reservoir of all spiritual testes or rashas.
Every living entity, beginning from Brahma, the firstborn living being within the material world, down to the insignificant ant, desires to relish some sort of taste derived from sense perceptions. These sensual pleasures are technically called rasas. Such rasas are of different varieties. In the revealed scriptures, the following 12 varieties of rasas are enumerated. Raja, anger, abhyuta, or wonder.
Mm-hmm. Shringara.
Shringara, conjugal love. Hasya, comedy. Virta, chivalry. Deya, mercy. Desha, servitorship. Sakya, fraternity.
Vayanaka.
Horror. Vihatsa, shock. Shanta, reality. Vatsaya, parenthood.
The sum total of all these rasas is called affection or love. Primarily, such signs of love are manifested in adoration, service, friendship, parental affection, and conjugal love. And when these five are absent, love is present indirectly in anger, wonder, comedy, chivalry, fear, shock, and so on. For example, when a man is in love with a woman, the rasa is called conjugal love. But when such love affairs are disturbed, there may be wonder, anger, shock, or even horror. Sometimes love affairs between two persons culminate in ghastly murder scenes. Such rasas are displayed between man and between animal and animal. There is no possibility of an exchange or rasa between a man and an animal or between a man and any other species of living beings within this material world. The rasas are exchanged between members of the same species, but as far as the spirit souls are concerned, they are one qualitatively with the Supreme Lord. Therefore, the rasas were originally exchanged between the spiritual living being and the spiritual whole, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The spiritual exchange or rasa is fully exhibited in the spiritual existence between living beings and the Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is therefore described in the Shruti mantras, Vedic hymns, as the fountainhead of all rasas. When one associates with the Supreme Lord and exchanges one's constitutional rasa with the Lord, then the living being is actually happy.
These Shruti mantras indicate that every living being has its constitutional position, which is endowed with a particular type of rasa to be exchanged with the personality of Godhead. In the liberated condition only, this primary rasa is experienced in full. In the material existence, the rasa is experienced in the perverted form, which is temporary, and thus the rasas of the material world are exhibited in the material form of raudra, anger, and so on.
Therefore, one who attains full knowledge of these different rasas, which are the basic principles of activities, can understand the false representations of the original rasas, which are reflected in the material world. The learned scholar seeks to relish the real rasa in the spiritual form. In the beginning, he desires to become one with the Supreme. Thus, less intelligent transcendentalists cannot go beyond this conception of becoming one with the spirit whole, without knowing of the different rasas.
In this shloka, it is definitely stated that the spiritual rasa, which is relished even in the liberated stage, can be experienced in the literature of the Srimad Bhagavatam due to its being the ripened fruit of all Vedic knowledge. By submissively hearing this transcendental literature, one can attain the full pleasure of his heart's desire, but one must be very careful to hear the message from the right source. Srimad Bhagavatam is exactly received from the right source. It was brought by Narada Muni from the spiritual world and given to his disciple Sri Vasudeva. The latter in turn delivered the message to his son Srila Sukadeva Goswami, and Srila Sukadeva Goswami delivered the message to Maharaj Pariksit just 7 days before the king's death. Srila Sukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul from his very birth. He was liberated even in the womb of his mother, and he did not undergo any sort of spiritual training after his birth. At birth, no one is qualified, neither in the mundane nor in the spiritual sense. But Sri Sukadeva Goswami, due to his being a perfectly liberated soul, did not have to undergo an evolutionary process for spiritual realization. Yet despite his being a completely liberated person, situated in the transcendental position above the three material modes, he was attracted to this transcendental rasa of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is adored by liberated souls and who sing Vedic hymns. The Supreme Lord's pastimes are more attractive to liberated souls than to mundane people. He is of necessity and not impersonal, because it is only possible to carry on transcendental rasa with a person.
In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are narrated, and the narration is systematically depicted by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Thus, the subject matter is appealing to all classes of persons, including those who seek liberation and those who seek to become one with the Supreme Whole.
In Sanskrit, the parrot is also known as sukha. When a ripened fruit is cut by the red beaks of such birds, its sweet flavor is enhanced. The Vedic fruit, which is mature and ripe in knowledge, is spoken through the lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, who is compared to the parrot not for his ability to recite the Bhagavatam exactly as learned from his father, but for his ability to present the work in a manner that would appeal to all classes of men.
The subject matter is so presented through the lips of Srila Sukadeva Goswami that any sincere listener that hears submissively can at once relish transcendental tastes, which are distinct from the perverted tastes of the material world. The ripened fruit is not dropped all of a sudden from the highest planet of Krishna Loka, Rather, it has come down carefully through the chain of disciplic succession without change or disturbance. Foolish people who are not in the transcendental disciplic succession commit great blunders by trying to understand the highest transcendental rasa known as the rasa dance without following in the footsteps of Shukadeva Goswami, who presents this fruit very carefully by stages of transcendental realization. One should be intelligent enough to know the position of Srimad Bhagavatam by considering personalities like Shukadeva Goswami, who deals with the subject so carefully. This process of disciplic succession of the Bhagavata school suggests that in the future, also Srimad Bhagavatam has to be understood from a person who is factually a representative of Srila Shukadeva Goswami. A professional man who makes a business out of reciting the Bhagavatam illegally is certainly not a representative of Shukadeva Goswami. Such a man's business is only to earn his livelihood. Therefore, one should refrain from hearing the lectures of such professional men. Such men usually go to the most confidential part of the literature without undergoing the gradual process of understanding this grave subject. They usually plunge into the subject matter of the rasa dance, which is misunderstood by the foolish class of men. Some of them take this to be immoral, while others try to cover it up by their own stupid interpretations. They have no desire to follow in the footsteps of Srila Shukadeva Goswami.
One should conclude, therefore, that the serious student of the rasa should receive the message of Bhagavatam in the chain of disciplic succession from Srila Shukadeva Goswami, who describes the Bhagavatam from its very beginning and not whimsically to satisfy the mundaner who has very little knowledge in transcendental science. Srimad Bhagavatam is so carefully presented that a sincere and serious person can at once enjoy the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge simply by drinking the nectarian juice through the mouth of Shukadeva Goswami or his bona fide representative.
Good. So this, just before we start, this second to last paragraph, Prabhupada talks about the professional Bhagavat reciters. Just for those who may not be familiar, this is a common affair in India. The Indian society is still, even to this day, very much connected with its inherent spirituality. And people will come to social events which are centered around spiritual activities, supposedly hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So the original Bhagavatam was heard in 7 days by Maharaj Parikshit, who sat in rapt attention day and night, fasting to death, just wanting to hear about Krishna before his death. But these Bhagavat Saptaha readers, as they're called, present it as a kind of a fun thing, social thing. They'll do it in the evenings, and they just go right to the part of Krishna's most confidential pastimes, since they don't really have 7 days to recite the entire text. So this is what Prabhupada is speaking so critically of, something that we aren't familiar with in the West, but it's a common affair in India. So let's go on to recap the purport here. The text again. O expert and thoughtful men, relish Srimad Bhagavatam, the mature fruit of the desire tree of Vedic literatures. It emanated from the lips of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. Therefore, this fruit has become even more tasteful, although its nectarian juice was already relishable for all, including liberated souls. So the purport discusses first the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree, the rasas, tastes, secondary and primary, Shukadeva Goswami, and the principle of disciplic succession. So we'll kind of break this down one by one. So first of all, the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree. This, what is the word for desire tree? The Sanskritists? Kalpavriksha or Kalpataroa, right? So this is mentioned in many, many places in the scriptures. Desire tree is the kind of tree that grows in the spiritual world. Such nice descriptions of the kingdom of God in our tradition, you know. There are trees that basically give whatever you ask for. So you can approach this tree and say, I would like a hot pakora, or I would like a glass of juice, or whatever, organic juice. Whatever you would like, it will give you immediately. And this is obviously a very valuable commodity, something which is not found in the material world. Trees are sometimes praised for their willingness to give of themselves, even in this world. Has anyone read that beautiful book by Saul Silverstein, The Giving Tree? This is a children's book. It's a beautiful book. It just tells a story about a little boy and a tree, and when he's a young boy goes and eats apples from the tree, and then he puts a swing in the tree, and then in the hot days he lies under the tree, and it's shady, and he cools off. And then he goes and gets married, and then he comes back with an axe because he needs to build a house, and he cuts down the tree and builds a house out of it. And this is how he thanks the tree for all its kindnesses. And then when he is an old man, he comes and sits on the stump. So the point of the book is that the tree is just gives and gives and gives. Also in the 10th canto, Krishna describes to Balaram, he's praising the trees of Vrindavan. Just look how they give their fruits and they give their shade and they give their wood for fuel and they give their sap. And the tree just gives and gives. So if that's true of the trees in this material world, what to speak of the spiritual world, how giving they are. So this is a kalpa taror. The Srimad Bhagavatam, or rather the Vedic literature, is compared to a kalpa taror, a desire tree, because it gives all kinds of knowledge. There are scriptures about art, like called the Shilpa Shastra, and architecture called the Vastu Shastras, and medicine, the Ayurveda Shastras, and politics. What is that? Niti Shastra, yes, ethics and politics. Every subject matter, so nicely described. And all of these, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, are necessary to keep body and soul together. They are like manuals for living in the material world. But they do not deal exclusively with the most important understanding, which is how to get out of the material world. That's why Srimad Bhagavatam is unique amongst all of the Vedic texts. So, in the beginning stages of study of the Vedas, a person may lack discrimination and think one is as good as another. And so they're all absolute and they're all transcendental. This is not actually the case. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks very strongly. Remember these verses about the effects of being absorbed in all the Vedas and yet not knowing their purpose. He compares it to, he calls it flowery language. And when one's mind, he says, is no longer disturbed by the flowery language of the Vedas, then one can understand the highest truth. So it's kind of oxymoronic, right? Self-contradictory. You know what an oxymoron is? A self-contradicting statement like political ethics or military intelligence. The Vedas are our source of wisdom, and yet they're criticized because, and this is the reason why, they just deal with the three modes of material nature. So Srimad Bhagavatam rises above that conception. You know, although they give everything, the Bhagavatam is unique amongst them. I'm getting ahead of myself here. Oh, before I go on, what else is compared to a desire tree that we remind ourselves each morning? Yeah, the Vaishnava. The devotee is like a desire tree. Vancha kalpa taru, vancha kalpa taru vyascha. We offer our respects to the Vaishnavas who are like desire trees. You approach a devotee, could I have this? Yes, yes, whatever you want. This is how at least it's supposed to be. So, okay, the essence of the tree, yes, giving. The essence of a tree, rather. What is the essence of a tree? Oh, yeah, it gives and gives. But, I mean, if you had to take one thing that is the essence of a tree, the fruit. This is the point, yeah. It gives its essence in a fruit. And that is Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam here is compared. It's very much like a mango. The mango is the most appreciated fruit, the king of fruits, Prabhupada said. And if you've ever lived in a tropical climate, you know the great value of mangoes because they are so plentiful. Even in Miami, The temple there, years ago when I lived there, one devotee used to go out in the morning with a shopping cart. And she just walked the neighborhood, and there'd be vacant lots with mango trees, and she'd just go and fill up the shopping cart with mangoes. Free mangoes, there's so many, nobody even bothers to pick them up. So they are, when ripened, so sweet and relishable and easy to chew, semi-soft and yet solid. So the Bhagavatam is like that. But the taste is enhanced when it is pecked by a parrot. This is a botanical fact, right? When the parrot breaks the skin, it releases even more sugars within the fruit somehow, by oxidation. So the very poetic analogy, means parrot, so Shukadev Goswami has imbibed this knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, and then he has spoken it, which makes it even sweeter. So the Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit, Shukadev is the parrot. So what is that sweetness of spiritual life? This is called rasa. Rasa is another one of those Sanskrit words that does not have exact English equivalents, but it means basically a taste. And in this purport, Prabhupada has given an overview of the primary and some of the secondary rasas, tastes that exist in relationships. Now, the five primary rasas, these are important to know. The secondary ones, not so much, but it's important to have these well understood. What are the five primary relationships? In order, starting with the beginning one. Shanta, right. Shantaras. Shanta means neutrality. It's spelled like Santa with an H. So, that means neutral. And that is awe and veneration. That is the relationship between man and God that is most prevalent in our society, in our experience in the West. God is seen as this great power, and the worshiper is seen as the most insignificant, praying person. So God is great. Praise God from whom all blessings flow. This was the prayer in the church in which I grew up. Praise him, all creatures here below. So God is to be praised. We are to be praying. If anyone has seen Monty Python, there's an image of God coming out when the supplicants are praying, and he says, "Stop groveling." He gets tired of this relationship, always asking. Okay, it's like in the car, are we there yet? Are we there yet? So this santaras, or neutrality, is very one-dimensional and one-way. God gives and we accept. So the second rasa is called dasya. Yes, now here we introduce some dynamism in the relationship. There is respect, there is veneration, but there's also service. Not just taking from God, but giving. What can I do for you? Of course, anything we could offer the Supreme Lord is very insignificant. We may think we're extremely intelligent, we're beautiful, we are accomplished, but really, what do we have compared to the Supreme Person? Just tiny, tiny, infinitesimal drops of those qualities which he has in full. So it's natural when dealing with a superior to want to approach in service. That is all we can offer. It's all we have. So I have very little, but please accept my service. This is the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. Please engage me in your service. This is dasya rasa. And then, as the devotee progresses, sakya. Sakya means friendship. So there is a relationship between a servant and the served. Relationship, which Prabhupada, by the way, describes as the most congenial form of intimacy. The relationship between the servant and the served. But if the servant comes to a level of being the peer of the served, this is called fraternity or sakya rasa. Now, why how could anyone think themselves to be God's peer? The answer is that by the arrangement of God, a person can think of God in that way. This is called what? What kind of maya? Yoga maya. Yeah, maya means illusion. So it's not that the individual devotee becomes God's peer, but he thinks he is. And why does God do this? He likes friends. He's not a loser, you know. He has friends. He likes relationships of all varieties. He doesn't just like to be praised and adored and served. He likes to hang out with his buddies. He likes to tend cows with all of his friends in Vrindavan. So this is the domain of very, very sincere and qualified devotees, obviously. God is not going to make friends. Just like a young person with poor discrimination will make friends with low-class people, lesser people, and then be dragged down by bad association. This is the experience of every single parent on earth. This is what their child does. But a discriminating person will accept only appropriate friends. And this is why advanced devotees exclusively enter these higher rasas. So after friendship, what is the next? Vatsalya. Right. So that is parental love, correct. The devotee becomes the parent of God. And the parent is in a superior position. Obviously, this is even more intimate devotees who are given this responsible position, like Mother Yashoda. And ultimately, the fifth rasa, final rasa, Madhurya rasa. This is the conjugal relationship between Radha and Krishna. So these five rasas are sequential in their content. Each one, in other words, builds on the previous one. In Shanta rasa, there is awe and veneration. In Dasya rasa, there is awe and veneration and service. In the Sakya rasa, or friendship, a friend can have veneration for a friend can serve a friend, and a friend also feels like an equal to the friend. In parental rasa, the parent can adore the child like they all do, coochie coochie coo, and the parent can certainly serves the child in so many ways, right? And the parent becomes a friend of the child, but the parent also tells the child what to do. Krishna, bring your father's slippers. Krishna, come in and take your bath. This is the additional feature in parental rasa. But in the conjugal rasa, there is an amalgamation of all five of all of these rasas. The lover may have veneration for the beloved. The lover may serve the beloved. The lover may feel like a friend to the beloved. The lover may tell the beloved what to do, as in marriage. And the lover and the beloved also enjoy their unique conjugal exchange. So this is considered the highest rasa and the complete experience of all rasas. It is reserved for the most confidential devotees. So this is why, as I mentioned, the unscrupulous commentators on Bhagavatam skip right to this part in the 10th canto where Krishna is dancing with the gopis. And they don't bother with the previous 9 cantos and all the necessary understanding before you can evaluate and accept these pastimes for what they are. The highest expression of love of God, not just another piece of sex literature, which is so popular in the material world. Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter talks about the tree growing on the bank of a lake. So in the reflection, the top branches are the lowest thing, and the roots are the highest thing. So in the same way, that which in the material world appears to be the highest thing is actually the lowest thing. This, you know, love, love, love. You turn on the radio, any station, any genre, they're saying either I love you so much or I'm so brokenhearted because I don't have you to love anymore. You know, it's all about the this conjugal rasa, but in a perverted way. So this is a perverted reflection of what is the highest, most pure and exquisite expression of love of God in the spiritual world. Now, in these seven secondary rasas, we'll just read them again briefly. There's anger, wonder, comedy, chivalry, mercy, horror or ghastliness, shock. So these are subordinate flavors of relationships that come up in various exchanges between Krishna and his devotees. The Nectar of Devotion really deals with this subject in more detail, but we'll go into it a little bit here in just a moment. It's important primarily to understand the difference between spiritual rasas that we're discussing in Krishna consciousness and ordinary expressions of these things that are simply a product of our material desires. Any questions or comments on this portion? Yes. Shringar, yes, the terms are interchangeable. They're similar. Okay. Okay. Yes. Who gave Shukadeva Goswami? So we're going to talk about Shukadeva in just a moment. So that's a good question. And just to finish up the rasas, here's an excerpt from the Nectar of Devotion about ghastliness. When a devotee lamenting for his past abominable activities shows special symptoms on his body, his feeling is called ecstasy in devotional service in ghastliness. This is caused by the awakening of Krishna consciousness. In this mellow of devotional service, in ghastliness, the sub-ecstatic symptoms are spitting upon the consideration of one's past life, contorting the face, covering the nose, and washing the hands. There is also trembling of the body, forcible twisting of the body, and perspiration. Other symptoms which may be present are shame, exhaustion, madness, illusion, frustration, humility, self-pity, restlessness, eagerness, and stunning of the body. Isn't that interesting? Some of the bhajans by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur express these feelings, right? Like Hari Hari Bipale. Oh my Lord, I've been drinking poison. In trying to enjoy material life. So this is an example of ghastliness. Okay. One more point on rasas before we move on. Did anyone pick up in the purport where Prabhupada says here, such rasas are displayed between man and man and animal and animal. There is no possibility of an exchange or rasa between a man and an animal or between a man and any other species. Was anyone thinking of their pet dogs? Okay. Well, just to underscore this point, I brought in a poem here from the former poet laureate of America, whose name is Billy Collins. It's a poem called The Reverent, which means like a ghost. I'd just like to read you an excerpt here. I am the dog you put to sleep, as you like to call the needle of oblivion. Come back to tell you this simple thing. I never liked you, not one bit. When I licked your face, I thought of biting off your nose. I resented the way you moved, your lack of animal grace. I would have run away, but I was too weak, a trick you taught me while I was learning to sit and heal. And, greatest of insults, shake hands without a hand. I admit the sight of the leash would excite me, but only because it meant I was about to smell things you had never touched. The jingling of my tags drove me mad. You always scratched me in the wrong place. All I ever wanted from you was food and fresh water in my metal bowls. Now I am free of the collar, the yellow raincoat, the monogram sweater, the absurdity of your lawn, and that is all you need to know about this place. accept what you already supposed and are glad it did not happen sooner, that everyone here can read and write, the dogs in poetry and the cats and others in prose. Anyway, I thought you might enjoy that. This is just proof that this is evidence that there cannot be a rasa between man and animal. So Shukadev Goswami, he is the son of Vyas. So I would presume his name was given by his father. Does anyone know the answer to Shyamala's question? Who named Shukadev Goswami? Because he was speaking the Bhagavatam so sweetly. I don't believe it's mentioned anywhere specifically. Vyas means one who divides. So he divided the Veda into four. The title, like, yes. The story of Shukadev Goswami, very briefly, is that he was the son of Vyasadeva, but he stayed in his mother's womb for a very long time. He was in there for 16 years. And his parents were quite distressed, so much so that Krishna came. And by hearing Krishna and about Krishna, Shukadeva became attracted. The reason he was not leaving the womb is because He was already self-realized, and he didn't want to be entangled. So he just stayed in the womb. Until he heard about Krishna. So this is the genesis of a very famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, that even liberated persons become attracted to the pastimes of Krishna. Anyone know this verse? Remember? Atmaramas Chamunayo. It's in the first canto. It's an important verse in our canon because it's discussed by Lord Chaitanya in great detail in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, this verse is about Shukadev Goswami, and there are others as well. There are many stories of impersonalists, Brahman-realized souls, becoming attracted to the pastimes of Krishna, but there are no examples of devotees of Krishna becoming attracted to Brahman, you see. So among those who have realized the all-pervading spirituality of God's existence or Brahman realization, there are two types, Brahmavadis and Mayavadis. So the Mayavadis say that Krishna is just an expansion of Brahman, that Brahman is really everything and Brahman manifests itself as Krishna. They are the greatest offenders at the lotus feet of the Lord. The Brahmavadis are innocent, and they just have approached the absolute truth through an indirect method of his Brahman effulgence. So they, like Shukadev Goswami, can progress, whereas the Mayavadis cannot. It's like a tow truck driver told me in Louisiana earlier this year, I can fix ignorant, but I can't fix stupid. So this is the difference between the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis. So Shukadev was one of these Brahmavadis who became attracted to Krishna and then became a great teacher. He was so brilliant that as soon as he was born, he immediately left home. He didn't bother with any of the rituals. He didn't get a sacred thread. He didn't go through any of the purificatory ceremonies because he was already completely self-realized. His father, who was a Pakka Brahmin, a priest, and wanted to initiate his son and such, went chasing after him. Wait, come back. So this story is in the first canto. Shukadev didn't even bother to get dressed. He's just walking en natural through the forest, and he happened to walk by a lake where all the ladies take bath. This is the rural Indian system. The ladies will bathe in one place, men will bathe in another place. But Shukadev just walked past these ladies who were bathing. And they saw him, and they didn't even notice or pay any attention to him. They just went on with their bathing. But when his father, Vyas, a great sage, came chasing after him, they saw him and they all covered themselves up. So Vyas noticed this and he stopped. He said, wait a minute, you didn't do that when my son came past. Why are you covering yourselves Oh, because he was completely on the spiritual platform, which is not a state that you've quite yet attained. So this is about the only mention of Shukadev Goswami we have in the first canto. He just how he went out and then he went from place to place, never staying more than the time it took to milk a cow, giving knowledge and then taking a little food and then going on. So he was an extraordinarily realized devotee. He doesn't speak a single word in the entire first canto, but the entire first canto is bringing us up to the dramatic moment where he meets Parikshit Maharaj, the great king, who is about to die. So this is where the Srimad Bhagavatam begins. The first canto is more or less an introduction for the whole text. So most of what we hear in the Bhagavatam is from Shukadev Goswami, from the beginning of the second canto on. Very often he's quoting other authorities, but in the 10th canto he speaks exclusively. The entire 10th canto is directly narrated by Shukadev. So, what else here? Yes, he's liberated soul, he became attracted to Krishna, teacher of King Parikshit, and the primary speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so this is why you'll be hearing about Shukadev, but not directly a great deal other than this class. Yes, Tulsi Rani? Well, they both believe that the impersonal feature of the Absolute is supreme. But the Brahmavadis think so only out of ignorance. You see, they haven't understood the higher realization of Bhagavan. But the Mayavadis offend Krishna, you see, by criticizing or minimizing. Oh, Krishna is just a manifestation of Brahman. It is right if if they are able to respect Krishna as the source of Brahman, then yes, then they are Brahmavadis. If they can't accept that, they're Mayavadis. But the Bhagavad Gita is full of statements on this point, right? Does anyone know some of them? Brahmanohi pratishtaham. Krishna says, "I am the basis of Brahman. It comes from me." He talks about how those who try to make progress in personal meditation find it very difficult. Klesho diktaratas tesham. It is very difficult to make progress. He's very ecumenical. He said, yes, you can go forward in meditating on Brahman to a certain point, but it's very difficult. You see. So that's Brahmavadi. But the Mayavadi, he says, on the other hand, avajananti mam mudha, the foolish think that I have assumed this form and personality. I am this Brahman, this impersonal energy, and I manifest as this person briefly or temporarily. So he condemns them very strongly. Okay. Mudhas. Okay? Other comments? Yes, Tony? He was cursed. We'll hear about that a little later on the class. But yes, he was cursed to die within 7 days by an ignorant young Brahmin. Yes? He heard it from his father in the womb. Mm-hmm. Yes. The context, you're asking about the context of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it begins with Suta Goswami speaking to the sages at Naimisharanya. The sages have gathered after Krishna has left this world. Now what's going to happen now that Krishna is gone? And they ask Suta, and Suta explains that Krishna will still be present in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he narrates the Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it when Shukadev recited it. No, by Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva writes the whole story. Yeah, okay? Yeah, Vyasadeva is giving the entire history. And he's also a character, just like in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, the author, Satsarup Goswami, is also one of the characters, Steve. He's one of the boys who joins the Swami in New York. And then later he's writing the biographies, but he talks about himself as Steve. Steve said this, Steve said that. He doesn't say, I said this, I said that. Okay. All right, anything? Yes, Jaini Tagaronga.
Is it possible for somebody to take up a path that
Yes, yes. It is possible, but only temporarily. Prabhupada compared them to cockroaches in the commode. You know, a cockroach will crawl out up the side of the bowl, but can't get out. It goes back down. So in the 10th canto, we find this verse. Abruya krishchena param padam tata patant yadhod yujmadangraya. They rise up to Brahman, but then again they come to mundane activities because there's no taste. There's no rasa. There's no relationships. They get lonely, he said. So just think of the arrogance of it. You know, we talked about relationships with God. Think of the arrogance of the impersonalist. Now I am God. They come to the temple, they see the deity of Krishna, and they say, wow, okay, I'm going to do whatever I can to get up on that altar and be in that position. See? Giriraj Maharaj wrote a poem, if to become God is your ambition, why should God help his own competition? See? So it's a very arrogant and foolish relationship with God, impersonalism. And the people who will not give it up are particularly offensive to Krishna. They can't recognize the supreme personality of Godhead. All right. While we're getting ready for breakfast, I'm just going to quickly flip through a few more points. Oh, it is hard to compete with prasadam. So in conclusion, may I just mention this principle of disciplic succession becomes sweeter. The presenter of Srimad Bhagavatam has a duty to present it as it is. Then it will affect the heart. And the role of a guru in disciplic succession is just that, just to give the same knowledge as Shukadeva Goswami. Prabhupada said the guru is like a postal peon or postman, just brings the letter and gives it to you unchanged. That is the, although it's apparently a very, very exalted role, it is in fact a very humble role of just delivering the knowledge intact, like the mango from the top of a tree. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.